Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mir. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations, a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mir.
To all listeners that we have with us today, which is our third show, interviews with immortal masters have been an impossibility until now. Their lives have been shrouded in mystery away from the scrutiny of the masses. Because of my working relationship with them and the love that exists between us, interviews with masters from Nigeria and from the island of Curacao in the West Indies will be shared today with the listeners. These are immortal masters. Stay with us and learn what is a deathless life really like. What happens when their flesh is cut? Whether they have to eat or sleep, and so much more that we've wanted to know. But is it available to all of us? For so many eons, man has been in a state of great suffering, wanting his life to change, but not very willing to change himself. It has always been that the image of where it is that man can develop to has been also shrouded in mystery. And there was a very good reason for this. Because for centuries, immortal masters did not stay in physicality. When they became immortal and ascended, they moved to what was called the Brotherhood of White Light. That realm in which ascended masters dwelt. Why was humanity so stagnant? Well, the fact is, as above, so below. And humanity was so stuck in their own developmental stages, not progressing as they should, because the ascended masters were too. In the past, when there were still dense realms of darkness, they were as stuck in the light as these beings were stuck in the darkness in the past. Those realms have now been eliminated, as the planet has been in a full-fledged ascension since February of 2005. Great events have occurred, which we will share on our following program. But know at least this, beloved listeners, that it is so much easier to fulfill the destiny of every human being that dwells on Earth today. And that is to reach the apex of humanity, which is ascended mastery. It is easier because more and more of these ascended masters, as we will hear today from the master from Nigeria and Shireen, the master from the island of Curacao, more and more of them have chosen very deliberately to stay in the flesh. It is a sacrifice. Why have masters that are immortal and ascended beings chosen to be in physicality? All things that are stuck and stagnant are that way because they are overpolarized into one pole or another. Dynamic growth, on the other hand, occurs when there is a pulsation between the masculine and the feminine pole, between the positive and the negative, more passive pole. The masters in the Brotherhood of White Light, thousands of them from all nations, from all walks of life, had previously been stagnant because of overpolarizing into the passive pole, which is the pole where one polarizes into beingness and does not balance it with enough doingness. It is therefore upon Mother's command that these masters that have now reached immortality since the time of the planetary ascension have been staying more and more in the flesh, where there is more doingness. From this, all masters have benefited. But How is it that change can occur in our listeners' lives to produce the same wonderful state of ascended mastery? Well, before the ascension, change was linear. Change went through three very distinct stages. And the first stage was transformation, that place where we realize that the old way of living, the old pursuits, the old friends may no longer serve our purpose of growth, and we shed that which is not pertinent to our growth. The next stage of it was transmutation, where now that we had shed all that was superfluous, that which remains was transmuted into perception and insight. Every challenge became a stepping stone. The lead was transmuted to gold, just like the old alchemists. Well, then came the third stage, which was transfiguration. And after transfiguring, because, and this is an essential point to remember this day as we understand the lives of these masters, it is so that any being can only have so much light before the body has to transfigure to its next stage. In the last Thursday night of February 2005, when I was in a room in Toronto with only Thoth, the great master, present, it happened to my body as well, where it went into what is called the second stage of ascended mastery, which is immortality. And the cells transfigured. Because I had reached a critical mass, shall we say, of light. Change is easier now. It is no longer linear. It is instantaneous. And basically, there are two ways in which this change can occur. Those of you that are very right brain oriented, and some of you may be scientists, some of you may be mathematicians, but your approach is what is called by the masters a horizontal approach. And this is fully explained in my book that is called Journey to the Heart of God, the two different approaches to life. It is a more feminine approach. For you, there is love, praise, and gratitude. If you can even, for a few weeks, live in a state of total gratitude, even for the obstacles that come your way, such great emotional attitudes coming from your heart will in fact create so much light in the body that it will transfigure. There are then also those that are linear or vertical in their approach to life, more masculine, in other words, using their left brain more. For you it is perception. And the book Journey to the Heart of God is for you. It gives perceptions that is greater and grander than man has ever thought before. And every time it stretches the mind a little further and a little further, more light comes in. The only way to gain power and light without damaging the interconnectedness of life is through perception or through the ascension attitudes of love and praise and gratitude. My brothers and sisters, you who are my light family that have joined us this day, it is no longer so that it has to take years. One grand concept can, in fact, change the body from mortal to immortal, or at the very least, silence the tyranny of the egoic mind, silence the internal dialogue. It is also so that you can, with love and praise and gratitude pouring forth from you, immediately change into your mastery. The years of processing that these masters and myself went through to get to where we were is now more obsolete. You see, when they decided to stay in human form, in physicality. The ascended mastery that they have was placed in the grid of humanity. A grid tells a species how to behave. Each species has such a grid, which are lines of light along which the information flows. Man's grid now contains, as a great possibility, immortal mastery. We will now take a little break for a commercial, and when we come back, we will speak to Simon from Nigeria. Born into one of the ruling families of Nigeria, this beloved master has been my friend for multiple years, and it is a great privilege to have the gentleness of his spirit on our show today. Join us when we come back.
Between the worlds with Al Mean. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Al Mean.
We welcome onto our show today the Master Simon, who is from Nigeria, to speak to him about the transformations that have occurred in his life. He is an immortal master, having gone through testings and overcomings to produce this blissful state. I welcome you to our program and thank you for this very precious opportunity, Master Simon.
I send my love to all the listeners.
Most of the masters in India and the Far East are in the stage of man before immortal mastery, called God consciousness. The bliss of an immortal master is so much deeper than the bliss that is found in God consciousness. Yet, you know, people in the West are astonished at the states of bliss achieved by them. I would like you very much to give our listeners a description of what such a deep bliss feels like and how it affects one's life.
Let me start by defining some of these terms. Many people confuse elevated states of praise or deeply moving emotion as bliss. But this is not so. Praise and love are attitudes. An attitude is a strong emotion coupled with a specific perception. For example, the perception of praise sees above the storm. It keeps its eyes elevated while a deep emotion fills the heart. Emotion, on the other hand, always as the element of desire as its foundation. For instance, the emotion of passion is the desire to know or experience. Love can also be a deep emotion when it is the desire to include. Bliss, on the other hand, are none of these things, yet all of them. It is felt as a song of the self. To explain how it feels, it would be like laughter rippling through the cells, the same way a stream ripples across the pebbles.
That's beautiful.
It is true that it is much deeper than the stage of emptiness and bliss experienced in the second stage of man, which you call God consciousness. In the stage of the immortal master, it is so deep that at first it is hard to move and is an enticement to retreat from engaging in life. But that will stifle growth. As such, it can be a blessing or it can be a foe.
Isn't that interesting? And, you know, as the Nagual and Seer Will said during one of the previous programs, there's no point of arrival. Is there anything else about the bliss of an immortal master that you can tell us? A chance to gather information about something like this comes very seldom. Those who have achieved this rare state of being on Earth have not done radio interviews. nor have they written books.
Well, you have. But to answer your question, there is a sweet liquid that is excreted in the back of the palate, in the soft area. It is a secretion that occurs when the channels of the masculine and feminine energy that flows off either side of the spine function properly. In other words, the inner feminine and masculine components must be perfectly balanced within the master for the transfiguration into an immortal being to take place. And this causes the secretion to take place.
You know, perhaps we should ask you to walk the listeners through the stages of man so that they can see what that it is available to them as well, Master Simon.
There are three large stages. Most of the world thinks that the identity is a little body and bundles of emotions and thoughts. They are in ego identification. Reason tries to run their lives, but causes a great deal of chaos instead, because reason can only have valid input when it comes to dealing with the known. But most of what we experience is yet unknown to us, such as the next moment or the new person we meet. The second last stage remembers that it is not this body, but a consciousness superimposed over all that is. Its minds become still. Thoughts occur only at times when interacting with others. The bliss felt during this stage makes the master want to withdraw from company, for it tends to pull the master out of expansion. The third stage is the stage of the immortal master, also called by some ascended mastery. At this time, the master's mind becomes so empty that he or she no longer needs to engage in much thought at all. Speaking and writing comes automatically while the emptiness of the mind is maintained. During this entire stage, physical changes become very noticeable. The master can go days without sleep, noticing only the need for sleep if thought returns, for example.
Oh, you know, it's interesting because my last three books have been written from a total place of silence of the mind with automatic writing, no prompting, just the hand writes and the book is written. So, could you please tell the listeners what to expect within each of these three larger stages? It's a tragedy that most masters have not interacted with humanity to give them what is their birthright, namely the knowledge of what can be achieved in humanness and what lies beyond that.
Yes, I would gladly share it. Once a true seeker dedicates his life to spiritual growth, he goes through three phases within identity consciousness: the initiate, the adept, and the master. The initiate has to do the opposite of what most spiritual teachers assist him to do. Instead of having his head stuffed with more information, it is a time of emptying out, of questioning every belief system until there is none left. This is somewhat fearful, as the initiate finds that the foundation upon which he has stood for most of his life no longer exists. After the initiate has acquired this true humility, he graduates to the level of adept. In this phase of ego identification, the adept no longer takes life at its face or surface value, but rather, he or she sees behind the appearances. In other words, they start to see symbolically. An example of seeing symbolically would be something like this. Susie slap her brother in the morning. Later that day, someone severely criticizes her. If Susie were to be seen symbolically, she would understand that she has received a verbal slap. In other words, she would realize that it is cause and effect, and that the same pain she feels was inflicted on a brother that morning, she would see the fever attack as a learning opportunity rather than feeling victimized. The last phase is the phase of mastery. Most medicine men and mystics get stuck here because the transition to the next large stage is a much larger step up in terms of consciousness. The test of the stage is larger also because the master has learned to manipulate reality by working with the hidden realms. Ego might now step forward. He may do his miracle for show or to impress. At this point, those who seek after power find themselves unable to proceed, for there is no place for ego in the next stage.
And of course, the many devotees or followers that one who does miracles for show attracts feed the ego and possibly the bank account of such a one. And there is nothing wrong with monetary compensation, of course, but it's the attitude and agenda of the master that's at issue. But please continue.
Well, the next stage of God consciousness has again three phases. The first being a phase in which a rather bewildering emptiness fills the seer's life. Having lost an instant all identity, he can hardly find any label to describe himself. All he knows is that he is no thing. A further puzzling thing about this phase is that it feels as though the matter has become emotionless. It is not really the case, because what has happened is that the emotion felt at this point are so large that they cannot be interpreted within the empty mind of the seer. The next phase is the phase of bliss, and it is a lot more pleasant and comfortable. There is very little energy at this point, and the master just wants to sit and experience the beautiful sensation rippling through his cells. Even the slightest exertion seems to be too much.
I remember that.
Those masters who think that they don't need to go beyond this point of enlightenment will never achieve immortality. They will get stuck here. The third phase is the result of a deliberate decision of the master in his bliss. He or she must make a decision to re-enter everyday life. They must leave their silence and again interact with their fellow human man in the final phase of the stage of God consciousness. If they do not, they cannot make the large transition to the next stage of immortal mastery.
And, you know, we should just mention to the listeners, when one is in this deep state of bliss, and the Master Simon has now explained to us the three stages, that is, in ego identification, where most reside, and the three stages that are in what we call God consciousness, where we no longer have an ego as an identity, but nevertheless, it is the big stage before the immortal mastery and the ascended mastery. And during the deep stage of bliss that is in this, it is hard to make any decision at all. Life becomes so impersonal that preferences hardly exist. Please tell us about the final one as well.
Okay. And of course, it is easy to lose sight of the journey, because by now the master lives in the moment, which is eternal time. But he successfully re-enters the human drama. He can graduate to the stage of man known as ascended or immortal mastery. Within this, the first phase is the phase which you have coined the total silent mind. I like your term for this.
Yeah.
Silent truly deepens beyond anything that can be imagined. During this first phase, where speaking is done automatically and without thought, the heart bursts open even more, and love flows forth from the master to every living being. The heart can only fully open when the mind is fully silent. This love is so intense that it frequently moves the master to tears. The second phase of immortal mastery is where the body experiences a type of electrical current that ripples through the cells, called by some a lightning flash, changing the body from mortal to immortal. This will only happen if the master has lived fully in eternal time. There is tension in the body of almost everyone on earth. The tension is the result of linear time. The master now experiences interesting changes in his body. Wounds heal very rapidly. Even deep cuts produce very little blood. In fact, unless the master expects it, it should produce no blood at all. Bodily elimination decreases and food intake becomes less. The place is very deep, and once again, the master must not let it drag him into inactivity. If he manages to continue with his daily activities, he will move into the next phase, that of fully ascended mastery. One has the option at this point to vibrate into higher realms, taking one's body with you. These realms are called the White Brotherhood, or the realms of the Ascended Masters.
Oh, thank you very, very much, Master Simon, for walking us through the three stages of man. What a priceless opportunity. And after we come back from our break, we will welcome the Master Shireen from the West Indies.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
Is a globally recognized mystic, seer, healer, and teacher of God consciousness. Her students, masters, discover their personal power by shedding layers of social conditioning while attaining the power of forgiveness, silence, and self-reliance. Explore with Elmeen as your Toltec guide the mysteries of the cosmos through her series of CDs, books, online magazine, seminars, and workshops. Discover your own personal path to manifestation, ascendancy, and enlightenment by visiting Elmeen on the web at www.spiritualjourneys.com. That's www.spiritualjourneys.com. Reclaim your right to live a life of mystery and magic, and log on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. You've been walking between the worlds with Elmeen. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Elmeen.
Welcome back to our listeners, and next we will speak to an immortal master from the island of Curaçao in the West Indies. She is the Master Shireen, and the ability to interview her makes me wish that this was a television show instead. Looking into her eyes, listeners, it's like looking into eternity, a true mirror of the beauty of her soul. And the sweetness and gentleness of her heart shows in the beauty of her face. My love for her is so deep. Last week, the Irish Master Joe said to me just prior to our show then that if only the listeners could feel the love that exists among us, that alone would be worth this radio show. But welcome, Master Shireen. Thank you for joining us this day. Please tell me how you view your role as an immortal master amongst humanity.
Thank you, Elmeen. Thank you for your kind words. Firstly, may I say that it is a pleasure to be on the show. It is always so that anyone who reaches the top of a flight of stairs has the responsibility to assist others that follow behind. Added illumination brings the added responsibility to help humanity achieve the same. The more the awareness of any master, the more global their work becomes.
Please explain what that means.
Well, as you know, huge changes have recently occurred in the cosmos. All of creation has been renewed into a more pure existence.
Yes, we had discussed that on a previous show when the Toltec Nahuals were interviewed. The changes are just profound.
This is the result of all illusion being successfully concluded within the cosmos. Only in the densest levels, like here on Earth, do some still foolishly cling to their belief in the old illusions. The war in the Middle East, for example, it is unreal in that it no longer represents the principle of conflict in the cosmos. In other words, its real part or validity has been removed. Those that do not understand this would try and heal it, but a master would instead hold the vision of its unreal nature to wipe out the illusion of war.
In other words, masters do not pay attention to the appearances, but work instead with the eternal principles that lie hidden behind them.
Exactly.
It's amazing to me how much a body hides, how much the physical hides. Two people can be standing side by side, and to the average eyes, they could seem the same. At the same level of development, but the one could be a million times more conscious than the other, and not even a conversation with them will reveal the difference. But from a master's perspective, life can be very lonely among the masses.
Well, it's hard to be lonely when one knows that you are all things.
True.
But certainly, one feels alone. That is why immortal masters journey to be together at least once or twice a year. It is such a fulfilling feeling to be around others whose minds are in complete silence.
Could you describe to our listeners the two different ways in which they can achieve ascension?
Sure. People approach life from two different perspectives. The emotional right brain perspective or the mental left brain perspective. Their approach to spiritual growth should be compatible with the way they approach life. The two ways of approaching ascension is through emotion and attitude or perception. It is so, however, that the one produces the other. Increased perception will increase the attitude of love, praise, and gratitude. And increased love, praise, and gratitude will in turn produce more perception. Let's take gratitude, for instance. Someone that is more emotional inclined, feeling true and abiding gratitude for everything in their life, every minute of the day, for even a few weeks, could in many cases be into what you term God consciousness, that place where thought is stilled. This is, of course, the first requirement for progressing farther into ascended mastery. This requires real surrender to life, because it means we also have to be grateful for the setbacks.
That's the difficult part. In fact, the Nahual mystics we interviewed stressed this as the cornerstone of spiritual growth. They said, cease to strive should be our daily mantra and goal. So, how about the people that approach life through perception, Master Shireen?
So, seeing a bigger and bigger picture, not just the little thing in front of one, but that which is the bigger pattern that produced the little event, loosens the grip of reason and overcomes ego. I have read your books, The Journey and Journey to the Heart of God, is a very good way to see a very large picture. In fact, I was with you when you solved one of the mysteries that had plagued mystics for eons, the horizontal axis to the Tree of Life. I think you've made these complex topics understandable for most.
Thank you, Master Shireen. That's good to hear.
The further someone can see, the more they discover perfection and the discovery that everything in the cosmos is really exactly the way it should be, fills the heart with love, praise, and gratitude.
The immortal masters that I know all have one thing in common, as do you. No matter how great their abilities and their light, they seem to radiate out this just beautiful humility. Can you comment on that?
Well, humility for a master is a different concept than for the rest of the world. Most think of humility as meaning someone is less than another, but that is simply paying tribute to the arrogance of the other person. What humility really means comes naturally to one who has acquired some wisdom. True humility can be divided into two parts. The first part is the recognition that every being has equal value. One's task may be more complex than another. The Archangel Michael may be more evolved than the small flower fairy in one's garden, but we are all like a strand in the beautiful web of life. If one is removed, it is incomplete. The second part of humility is the absolute acknowledgement that we know virtually nothing. It is a fool that, having found a small belief system, clings to it like someone would cling to their prison bars, defending it with all his might if it should be challenged. The master, on the other hand, knows that the biggest part of existence is beyond what he can see, beyond his or her perspective. Some like that has nothing to prove and everything to learn.
But there's also the part that most people live for others' approval. Furthermore, they constantly compare themselves to others, giving them either self-pity or self-arrogance. A lot of baggage to carry through life, isn't it?
It really is a lot of baggage, isn't it? Masters get their approval from themselves. They understand that as they walk a path that's higher and higher, that the view becomes larger and larger. Others cannot understand because they don't see the same view. As for constantly comparing oneself, that stops when the ego is gone.
The more we want to become masters, the more necessary it is that we live as though we already are. In other words, we define ourselves by what we are becoming. The more we discard foolish habits like comparing ourselves to others, the closer we get to mastery.
Yes, exactly.
Can ascended masters that have chosen to stay in denser realms amongst humanity do the same miracles that beings in higher realms can? And if not, why not?
Well, there is no limit to what any being can do. The same with those who have mastered the mind. But it certainly is easier to do miracles that higher ones frequency. We should possibly make clear at this time for your listeners that just because a being lives in a less dense level doesn't mean they are more advanced in all ways.
Master Shireen, I will interrupt. For some reason, the music is playing 2 minutes earlier, so
oh.
We'll go with the flow.
Okay.
No opposition to life, right? Please stay with us and come back after the commercial break.
Sure.
Thank you.
Almeen is a globally recognized mystic, seer, healer, and teacher of God consciousness. Her students, masters, discover their personal power by shedding layers of social conditioning while attaining the power of forgiveness, silence, and self-reliance. Explore with Almeen as you're told to guide the mysteries of the cosmos through her series of CDs, books, online magazine, seminars, and workshops. Discover your own personal path to manifestation, ascendancy, and enlightenment by visiting Almeen on the web at www.spiritualjourneys.com. That's www.spiritualjourneys.com. Reclaim your right to live a life of mystery and magic. Log on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Almeen.
We are with the great immortal master, Shireen, from Curacao in the West Indies. And I have just asked her if ascended masters have chosen to stay in denser realms amongst humanity, do the same miracles that beings in higher realms can. And if not, why not? And she was explaining to us that, of course, there's no limit to who, what any being can do, including those who have mastered the mind. But it is easier to do miracles the higher one's frequency is. And then she's just making clear to the listeners that just because being in a dense level doesn't mean that they're more advanced in all ways. Humanity lives at the densest level. Star beings from other planets are usually much less dense. Yet the wealth of emotion that a human can experience far exceeds what other planetary beings can feel. Emotion is such a priceless gift. But to get back to the question, it's much easier for less dense beings to affect changes in their environment, but very difficult for them to change the denser levels below them. And just to make sure we understand, what we're saying is it's easier for beings in higher realms to do what would seem miraculous to us in their own realm than it is for a more dense master to do miracles in their own realm. Do you agree with me so far, Shireen?
Oh, yes.
But it is very different for a being from a higher realm to do miracles in our realm. It's very, very difficult. Is that what you've said?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Please give us in detail the testing that we go through in each of the stages of man until we become fully ascended masters. We have just spoken to Master Simon, whom you know, and he has described to our listeners what the stages are. But they don't yet know what to expect as testing as they progress along this road.
Yes, the Master Simon described the stages very well. I will use the same terminology. As he has said, there are three main stages within humanness, each with three distinct phases. The first phase of every stage tests the light seeker with fear. It's a huge step to put one's feet upon a path where spiritual growth is your primary concern. One leaves the world behind. The first phase within ego identity or identity consciousness, as he called it, is a fearful one because often one leaves friends and family behind. One also discards comfortable belief systems. The second phase of every one of these stages has to do with addiction. In the case of ego identification, the light worker in its second phase can become addicted to challenge. Let me explain. When one starts to look at why things happen rather than feeling victimized by them, it brings the gift of larger and larger perception. Perception gives power. The adept in this second phase feels surges of power. It even releases hormonal excretions, and it is this that he can become addicted to. If he does, he will go around jumping on every bandwagon looking for problems to solve and get sidetracked from his journey. In the third phase of each of the three stages of man, the testing is power and how we deal with it. In the third phase of this stage of man, most medicine men, mystics, or whatever they call themselves, are able to do some miracles. This brings a lot of respect and attention from others. The question here is, will they become power seekers, or will they keep their humility and their eyes fixed on the horizon and remain perception seekers? If they become power seekers at this point, they will stay behind the prison bars of the ego and not continue on.
Oh my goodness, you know, we're back at that point of humility again. It really is such a crucial part of the journey, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. Now we come to the first stage of where the individual realizes they are not the small itself. And, of course, the testing, as in each first phase, is fear. The complete emptying out of thought that happens in an instant creates a feeling of disassociation from life. Loved ones around the master may complain about how distant he is. In addition, the pure love flowing from someone in a state of the silence of the mind will flush up issues in their life. Masters have encountered rage from loved ones who blame the master for those feelings. Feeling lost and alone, the master varies between vast expansion and contraction, both new and unfamiliar experiences. If there is enough fear and resistance to what has happened, the master or seer, as he is now called, may even step back into ego identification. But if he surrenders to what has happened, he will move into the next phase, which is the phase of bliss. In the bliss, addiction is very easy to succumb. Bliss, bubbling through every cell, makes the master not care about anything. Besides, he can see the perfection of life, so why worry? Worry is never advisable, but to remember the journey is. And so if he or she can just remember within his vast expansion and bliss that life is a journey and not a camp, he can move on to the third phase. The testing here, as in the third phase of each of the stages, has to do with power. The master at this stage has become very powerful, but is required to have full cooperation with life.
Are you saying that even though he can manipulate reality, he sees the perfection of why reality is the way it is, and therefore doesn't use this power?
That is what I mean, yes. In the expanded awareness of the seer, at this point, the slightest intention will alter life. The key is that he learns where life has written him into the script. To do so, and where he has to stand back and let life flow on its course.
If I may interject, this is not an easy phase for the master to be in. Living in a state of expansion, he appears much more clumsy at living life. Everyone knows that being in expanded states of bliss is enlightened. But as the enlightened one tries to handle everyday life while in these expanded states, he may forget to put his socks on or wear his shoes on the wrong feet and silly things like that. In fact, I remember even walking seems awkward. I remember also being in this phase and having to speak to a group of people in Portland, Oregon. First of all, I could barely walk as I entered the room. Secondly, I couldn't find the stairs that led onto the stage. I had to crawl onto the stage on my hands and knees, but I then couldn't get up properly, so I crawled over to the podium to help myself up. By the time I was ready to speak, half my class had left. But things did get better later on in that phase. Something else I found is that previously, the moment was all there was, and if anyone were to ask me about my childhood memories, I couldn't even remember. But now in this third phase that you're talking about, the memories came back. So what about the final stage of man that is ascended mastery? How about those phases?
Well, of course, the first one would concern fear. It takes a lot of trust to speak to someone for, say, a half an hour and not know a word you said since there was no conscious thought behind it. And the second phase, the threat of addiction, is very, very large because the bliss is so much deeper. I also want to add that these changes in development could detox the body a lot. One thinks that there would come a point where there is no more detoxing possible. But even in the stages beyond those of man, one detoxes unwanted substances on behalf of the cosmos as you live the greater life. And now we come to the pinnacle of human development, the third phase of ascended mastery. The testing that we experience in this phase deals with power, but in a different way than before. The issue here is that if the master is lulled into inactivity, the power that he has spent a lifetime accumulating sifts through his finger like sand. He may be expanded in perception, but because the perception does not become experiential knowledge, it does not give its gift of power.
So what I hear you saying is that the ascended master must interact with light. Life to turn these vast insights into experience.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Master Shireen, thank you for this wonderful opportunity in sharing your great wisdom with our listeners. My love to you always, and I hope to be with you soon again.
Oh, thank you, Amin. It's always a pleasure to be of service.
The illustration of what occurs to the fields around the body of man can be found in the book Secrets of the Hidden Realms, Mystical Keys to the Unseen Worlds. Thank you for joining us, and join us again next week when we will be speaking about what is occurring with the Golden City and other planetary gods like Thoth himself is occupied in preparing. Learn for whom the city is being prepared, when it will be visible to all, and what this will mean to Earth's inhabitants. Thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to being with you again.